You're listening to the Talk Story Radio Network.
Welcome to another edition of Swoop's World, right here on the new Talk Story Radio Network. Swoop's World, where you get all you need to know about arts, culture, news, and happiness. Our number, if you want to give us a call tonight, is 562-912-3444. You can always email us at swoopsworld@gmail.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Once again, if you want to give us a call, that number is 562-912-3444. Now just sit back and enjoy another edition of Swoop's World on the new Talk Story Radio Network. Welcome to another edition of Swoop's World, prime time on a Thursday afternoon. How's it going, Peter?
It's going all right.
Man, we had a good time last night, huh?
We sure did, yeah. we had a great band in here.
Yeah, we did. Ramakega, came in and did a great job, played some great songs for us, and that's up on the archives now. You can just get it right there at swoopsworld.com. Go to the Ramakega post and open it up, and there you'll see the player inside. You can listen to it. It's also free to download from iTunes, and it's also on Blog Talk, so check that out, and we're looking forward to today, man. Our guest today is Christine Korda, and that should be an interesting interview. What
definitely,
do you think?
Definitely, yeah. She sounds like she has definitely had a couple of interesting experiences, one of which she's going to talk to us about.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it'll be definitely different than anything we've had anytime I can think of.
Absolutely. Yeah. And for those who don't know, Christine Korda is a psychic medium and psychic paranormal investigator. And along with her group, I'll have to ask her about this, Nespara, she conducts investigations based on psychic abilities, but also uses technical aspects to back up any psychic evidence received. Her group conducts very careful and diligent investigations. In the 80s and 90s, Christine suffered a severe demonic attack, so much so that the Roman Catholic Church was called in and performed a formal exorcism. So we're going to be able to hear all about that today. Yeah. and find out what happened with that and what she went through. And then kind of continue on what she's doing today. And she's got a couple shows that people can check out because she's on Blog Talk.
That's right.
Yeah, Kiss Me, I'm Psychic, I believe, is the name of her network there. So looking forward to that. And I got to run out of here quickly after the show today. My son's got a soccer game. So
I hear you. It's kind of exciting. Well, so as a quick follow-up to last night, as we were talking with T-Bone's Time Out there, we talked about the Dodgers, and in today's paper, I don't know if you saw that, they mentioned that, so the whole thing was that McCourt wants the Fox thing to happen, right, and blah, 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 blah. One of the things he's been threatening to do is to file bankruptcy, and then a bankruptcy court could, in theory, force MLB to accept
the Fox offer.
The Fox offer. However, for that to happen, Fox would have to be on board. Fox would have to sign off, because they're essentially funding the bankruptcy, and Fox has leaked that they would in no way be supportive of a bankruptcy. I mean, if the court decides that bankruptcy can happen without Fox,
right?
Which there doesn't seem to be any way that's possible. It seemed like it would all hinge on Fox, and if that were the case, Fox has made it clear that they are not kosher with that. That ain't happening. So
I could see that.
So it's like this guy everywhere. He's like a man trapped in a maze, and he turns left, and each time, it's like watching him, and he's like, oh, he thinks he's getting out, and then all of a sudden he runs into another dead end, and then he comes, but then he finds another way to go somewhere else. I'll tell you, it's more entertaining reading the reports on him than it is reading about how the Dodgers played the day before.
Absolutely.
Right now, the Dodgers aren't looking good.
He's always got an idea or a scheme, I should say, man. And you know what?
Totally.
The one thing he did that really it sucks if you want to buy the team, and sucks with the way the team's being run and stuff, but as a pure business point, by splitting that up into three companies, man.
At least three. I mean,
yeah, three that we know of.
Yeah. I've heard rumors that there might be as many as 20 different companies that all have some aspect of either like the stadium or the parking or the this or that.
But then you got to go back to the fact, here's a guy who's made himself a friggin' billionaire with parking lots. So
parking lots,
He's been up to some tricky stuff for a while, so.
Yeah.
We'll have to follow that and get on to that. Well, let's take a quick break and come back and bring our guest on. You're listening to Swoops World on Talk Story Radio Network. This here is Rama Kega, and this is called There's More. Wait, There's More. And when we get back, we'll have Christine Korda.
Goodbye, hello, you're soaring high. Then running low, you think you know, but then you don't. What if you could, but you won't?
Back to Swoops World on Talk Story Radio Network, and our guest today is psychic Christine Korda. Christine, are you with us?
I am with you. How you doing?
Good. How are you today?
Great.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. Love your show.
Thank you so much. Well, let's start from the beginning. Tell us a little bit about where you grew up and where you were raised, and what your youth was like.
Oh, okay. Well, I grew up in Cheshire, Connecticut, which is a little middle-class town. I don't really know how many miles out of from Hartford. I know your listeners are mainly from California, but it's just a little town in Connecticut. My childhood was bad, aside from the ritual abuse that I talk about. I vividly remember the ritual abuse happening, but in my childhood it was more or less denied. I never accepted what happened to me. Used to actually think that I was either nuts or, you know, whatever. So my childhood was bad. My parents were not very good people. From all appearances, it looked like they were good. Upper middle class, you know, went to fairly good schools. Started to drink when I was very, very young, probably like 11. By the time I was 12, I had run away on a continual basis, So it was bad. I know we only have an hour, so I'm trying to try to really condense it.
Take
which
your
is
time.
Extremely hard for me anyway, even if I'm talking about the weather. So from there, you know, I was always fighting, you know, with different abuses that were coming on to me, both sexual abuse and physical abuse within the, you know, my main family or whatever you call it, immediate family.
Right.
But the knowledge, the full knowledge of the ritual abuse that happened to me did not come to me until I was in my 20s. Because I know a lot of people, you know, they talk about false memories and whatnot, so I just want to make that clear. My artwork depicted, and I still have it, as a matter of fact, when I was like 6, 7, 8, whatever, kindergarten and then upward, my artwork depicted just horrific ritual abuse. Just to clarify that, because a lot of people get confused. There's a lot of things that are said about ritual abuse and whatnot.
Right.
So my childhood was a struggle, to say the least.
Wow. Wow. And you said it was in your 20s that you started to acknowledge this. How did that come about?
Well, you know, when anything bad happens to us, and I'm not a psychologist, I don't even play one on the radio, you know, a lot of us do, though. When anything bad happens to anyone, you know, we have a tendency to, we remember things differently, more profoundly or exaggerated or not exaggerated. But I'm sorry, I forgot the question.
No, how did the memories, what sparked that?
Well, the memories were always there. It was the acceptance of them that was not there.
Okay.
You know, there was a lot of in my artwork, which most psychologists will tell you is how a child gets out, you know, what has happened to them, where you can find a lot about what's happening to a child by having them sit down and draw, you know, or color or whatever.
Right.
And that's where they were coming from. And I never understood why I had literally the need to draw these images. And some of them were just really horrific.
Yeah.
So they were always there, but as I got older and I ran, I knew that it had happened, but I just kept pushing it away between, you know, just total denial, just complete denial. When I got into my 20s, my early 20s, and I had left the house and, you know, I had run away. I mean, all through my teenage years, I was either a runaway living on the street or, you know, my parents, in trying to hide the problem, would have me institutionalized, you know, different hospitals I was in. It was just like a bouncing around. It was a horrible life. And when I think of it, I think, my God, I'm sort of glad that I'm getting older, because I would never want to go back and relive that.
Yeah.
But in my early 20s, I became a certified nurse's aide. And I hurt my back, unfortunately, when I was working with some elderly people and I had to lift someone. And I strained my back muscles, and I had some sciatic problems. So, you know, a girl that I knew that worked there had a friend who used to go to different healing services. You know, they have, like, Christian healing services. And I would start to go with her just merely for the reason that I had nothing else to do on a Friday night, which is a sad, you know, testament to what I did in my 20s. But, you know, what else are you going to do? You know, I couldn't really walk around that well. And, you know, there was different ones that I went to, and they never bothered me. I never really, like, waved my arms around, or it just never made any sense to me at all. I was I was brought up in the Catholic Church, ironically, until I was about 7, and had made to get my first communion, and then that was it. But when I went in, when I was in my early 20s, I went to a healing mass with a priest named Father Freddie Alfonso, who I wish I could get in touch with him again. I believe he died. I wouldn't call him since he's dead, but, you know, I guess I'm supposed to. I suppose I can just call him anytime. But he had a healing ministry with the deaf in Bombay, India. And that's all I knew about him. But unknown to me, he was an exorcist. And, you know, what do we hear of that sort of thing? I mean, I didn't grow up with any type of religion, with that type of religion, I never grew up knowing anything about that. I didn't know the differences between a Catholic and a Protestant church, et cetera, et cetera. So when I went up in the Holy Line there to receive the blessing, which is basically what he was offering just a basic blessing to people. He wasn't offering exorcisms. I've never once ever heard of anybody doing that. I guess there are people, but really dangerous thing to do. I got up to him, standing in front of him, and as I got closer to him, it was like something kind of came out of my left side. I don't really know how to describe it in an appropriate way, except that it was just weird, and it wasn't something that – it just was separate from me. I thought at the time, oh, my God, I'm really nuts. But when you're really nuts – and I don't mean to be rude and say that – but when you're really mentally ill and really truly delusional, the fact of the matter is that you rarely know it. You rarely will say, wow, who's that standing over there? You know, you know.
Right.
And there was something there, and I just will never, ever doubt that. And whatever it was, I don't want to, you know, get into that or give it recognition. It was very, very angry. It was very foul. It was a clear presence was right there. And whatever it was, it was like it wasn't part of me, but it was certainly attached to me. And it did not want to go up and see this man. And I got mad. I have a real strong temper, and I don't like to back down from anything. And I think that that's been a blessing for me as well as a, God forgive I say this, but a curse. And I got mad and thought, why am I – he's just a priest. He's a nice priest. He's not going to hurt me. And I sort of was like in an argument going on. As I got closer to go stand up in front of him before he was going to give me the blessing – and I never remembered this part of it. This is only what people told me, was that I literally levitated, you know, and went really very fast to the back of the church. Now, when you're talking Catholics and coffee and donuts, you know that very little removes them from the church when that's going on. And, you know, they were like, it was pandemonium. I remember, and I'm sorry for my bad joke, but I can't help it. People were terrified. And, you know, of course, I would have been too had I seen it,
right.
But I didn't see anything of it. I remember him standing over me. Some other people were around, and he was such a kind man that, you know, at the time I was looking at him, I couldn't control what was going on, the voices that were coming out, the way that my body was – I mean, I became very, very strong, very, very strong, and – you know, it was a lot of time went by, and somebody who was very, very concerned called an ambulance, and they offered to the people that I was possessed by the devil, and I ended up going to New Haven Hospital or St. Vincent's. I don't remember which one. I guess it doesn't matter. And they actually put me into the psychiatric ward, not the ward, but the holding cell or whatever it was.
Right.
And checked me out. I said, I don't know, I've been tired. I mean, you know, what am I going to say? Well, gee, you know, it was PMS. I had no idea what to say to them. So they checked me out and did the testing, and they couldn't find anything at that point to suggest that I was psychotic or mentally ill. So I left, and I noticed before leaving that I had a burn on my throat. And, you know, the area, right, I guess, I don't know what's there. When you give a tracheotomy to somebody right in that spot.
Yeah.
And I had, like, little burns up in my upper chest and arms, and I was like, what the heck? Inside of me, I was very, very understanding of what had just happened. I didn't fully know, but I got it. I got that there was something going on, but I really didn't want to believe it because – if you're going through something that's inhuman or demonic, it's not like on TV where people are like, oh, come on, let's go hunt some more of these demons and let's have a ghost demon hunt. And it's not like that. You really don't want to go through it.
Right.
You do not want to experience what they can do to human beings. So I called this priest up mostly out of like desperation to find out what was going on or what had gone on at that healing mass. But I guess in a way to reach out. And I asked him, I said, you know, what did you do to me? And he was such a nice man. He said, I did nothing to you. I said, well, you burned my neck. I said, I had seen the doctor. The doctor said it was a burn, but also a bruise, a very, very deep bruise in my neck. And he said all he had done was taken a relic that he had, and a relic is something that is very holy and blessed, like a piece of the cross or whatever, and he placed it on my neck to try to get the demonic entity or whatever to speak its name, which is something that exorcists do. And I said, well, why were you throwing burning water on me? And he said, that wasn't burning water, that was holy water. So it was kind of like a dun-dun-dun, kind of a, you know, situation where I was like, oh my goodness. And then I went home that night and, you know, it was just terrible. It was insidious. I mean, the activity that night, couldn't sleep a wink. And I remember kind of drowsing, just hearing them, and the activity that was going on around was just terrible. So I said, well, to prove it to myself and to prove it to you, I'm going to come back and I'm going to see you. And you can go ahead and pray to your heart's content, because I'm either crazy or something happened and it had nothing to do with any demon. So I didn't want to believe it at all.
Right.
So to make a long story short, I did. It was not me. It was something else. He prayed over me again three or four nights later, and I felt free. I felt like something left, just this big weight had come off of me. Unfortunately... after that, the people that were in my childhood who were from, I hate to use the word satanic cults, because that is not really the proper way to say it. There's so many different religions and cults and everything, but just for the sake of calling them what, you know, so we can talk about it.
Right.
People from that cult were I was re-ritualized. Someone actually came up behind me and didn't have anything in their hands, but like came up with a gesture of like tying something around my waist, which the next time I saw Father Freddy, and I'm almost done, I promise. The next time I saw Father Freddy, he had taken the only thing I could say to him, he said, what happened to you? I prayed and you were feeling so good. And he was, you know, he was upset. And I was like, I don't know. And, you know, when he started to pray again and all hell broke loose again, much, much worse. I mean, this I remember a little bit more of. I said to him, I said, and I'm not going to give any names, somebody did something to my waist. So he was very smart, because you can't, listening to myself say this, I'm like, my God, I sound like a lunatic, you know? But he knew enough that it had been a curse, some type of reinforcement or whatever, and he placed the relic around my waist. And I swear to God, if it didn't happen to me, I would never even consider believing it. And as he did, he prayed. I could feel movement under the skin, and then it almost like it went up and came, and I would cough, viciously cough. But again, you know, there wasn't enough time in the day or night to be able to finish it. It was bad. It was extremely bad demonic infestation. So up to that point, which was like maybe 1985.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much the beginning. Like I said, it takes a long time to tell it.
Wow.
I don't want to go just on a tangent here.
No. If understand something. So the things that happened to you prior to this, there were never, other than you running away, and did you contact anybody trying to seek some type of help for what was going on before it got to that point?
Okay, you mean for the abuse? Just the regular abuse? Like,
well, that's a question I have. Does it all tie together somehow? Are these separate things in your lives, or is there some kind of... something that connects these two, the abuse and the demons?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you talk occult, when you're talking about a cult mentality, first of all, the cult mentality is very, very real. Let's just talk about that for a second. And the reality of a demon or a demonic entity we're going to just put that aside, because when somebody believes in something, whether it's good or bad, their behavior is going to reflect their belief, and that's going to give them, that's where the power is going to come from. So certainly when you have people who are misled or misguided enough to believe in an entity that thrives on hatred, abuse, just nastiness, you know, and revenge and all different things that are terrible, when they believe in that entity, their behavior is going to follow it. So abuse is just almost like a given, you know? I mean, there are people who abuse their children and they're mentally ill, and they're not doing it to follow some entity. And then there's people who follow an entity, and they might just follow the entity in their mind, and there's no real entity. But it's real because they make it real with their behavior. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So yeah. It was separate, but it was all tied in together, like an alcoholic committing abuse. The alcohol leads you to commit those acts, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of a good analogy. I think I'll keep that one.
Well, I talked to a friend of mine who happens to be a priest, and he was trying to explain some things to me. And he says, you know, the belief is that the person who receives the exorcism, they've been used as a vessel for these spirits. Mm-hmm. And my question is do we know how those spirits became a part of you?
Well, for my situation, yes, rituals. And certainly when you take a child and you abuse them, just like I said, abnormally abuse them, they're going to have weaknesses. They're going to develop weaknesses. And if you, again, theoretically we're going into that, and I believe they exist, but just for anybody who thinks they don't, just saying that if the demons exist, they're going to go where there's weakness. They're going to go where they're not going to respect that, oh, hey, the kid was a little kid and the parents did this. They're just going to go where they're welcome, no matter who's welcoming them. And sort of a spiritual law says where there's the carcass, there the vultures gather. You know, I believe that's not a spiritual law. That's in the Bible. Uh-huh. You know, where the carcass is, there the vultures gather. And that's what happens. And for me, they were you know, when you say a mass for somebody, or you say prayers for somebody, or you do spells, whatever, and it's basically just the same things with different titles, it's the intent that gives them the power and the direction that they go. When you do these things, you're moving energy, you're asking entities, angels, whether they're good or bad, you're asking these things to come around. Right. And when you create a person, and I was created, not by God, but I was created by this, by my parents and by this cult to be, God, I don't even want to say it, but yes, to be a vessel, to be somebody who was going to be, you know, the same way you would ask for God to bless your child, you know, and angels to be around your child. They did the exact opposite. To them, it was the right thing to do. To them, that was the better thing to do. You know, they didn't conceive it as evil or nasty or mean.
It was just their way of life.
Yeah. I mean, when you have a cult, no matter what cult it is, it could be an evil cult, it can be a godlike cult, it could be a Christian cult, it doesn't matter. When a person goes into a cult, they're not really able to live, they don't want to take responsibility, number one. Either that, and they don't want to, they want to control other people, or they want to be controlled. So I fell into that situation, and they wanted me to, you know, carry the family lineage up to keep the coven. It was a coven, actually, of people. It wasn't a cult, and they wanted me to keep that up. So, you know, that's how they get things in. It's not as hard as people think it is. It really isn't. That's why we should always, like, check our weaknesses and everything, you know, because it sadly, especially in the world now, and I sounded really old there, but that's true.
when you were seeing the priest and stuff, were there a lot of steps that you had to go through with him Because I understand the Catholic Church, the way they decide on exorcisms and stuff, it's a series of events that have to take place prior to.
Yeah, when I saw Father Freddie, he was not in the position to give me an exorcism, a formal exorcism. I saw him in 85, I saw him again in 87, and I saw him again in 88. The church, it was the Bridgeport Diocese, they did not want to help me at all. Oh, he was furious. He was absolutely furious. They just didn't want to get involved. Outright, nope, we don't want to get involved. We don't want to do anything. Send her somewhere. Send her to the Protestants. They do this. And basically, that's what it was. And it's horrible that they did that. So I, being from the Hartford, Connecticut Archdiocese, on the advice of Father Freddie, I started to petition, because he said to me it's not going to come out, certainly, you know, with one or two nights, and if you're going to be being re-ritualized or re-traumatized, it's certainly not going to come out that way. But also, just because I was weak on my own and I had a lot of issues, I certainly wasn't without problems, you know. They were coming around for that reason, too. But he highly recommended going and petitioning the church in the Hartford Archdiocese for a formal exorcism, which I actually began to do in 1989, and then I went and met with them a couple times, the round table. Oh, what a group there, let me tell you. I don't want to get into it. I'm a little bitter, you know? Just a little, you know? And I talked to them, but the good thing that the Catholic Church does, and the thing that they did for me, is that they sent me out literally just over and over and over again to check my brain waves, to check my heart, to check my blood, to check psychiatrically. I had to go into the hospital for like a week at a time, like twice, I think, to just so they could really, really see. And I actually was given a psychiatrist to go see who worked within the church, to see if what I was remembering, because when I had the prayer, it freed me psychologically, and it, maybe that's what it does a lot more of than spiritually, but I think the two are very connected. So it freed me enough to begin to start facing, hey, this really happened, and I can't run away from it.
Right.
But they did that to me. I sat with the psychiatrist, and I had it took me till 1991 to get the actual exorcism.
Wow.
Yeah, so it is not done. And certainly back in the late 80s, early 90s, even though there was that rush of everybody's, you know, being in a cult and, oh, my God, the music is horrible. And, you know, even then it was very, very hard, very, very hard. And there was, and I'm not going to mention the name, there was a very few paranormal investigators around then. But there was a few that were involved with the Catholic Church back then that were very much interested in my, quote, case in a very exploitative way.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to hear of it. Because this was, you know, I've just started talking about this again recently. It's not easy for me to talk about, and it's nobody's business to be using it for anything except how I want to talk about it and who I want to talk about it to.
Right.
These people wanted to bring it out and put it in Demonic Monthly or whatever the heck they wanted to put it in, and I wasn't going to have it. It was my pain, and it was horrible. You don't you don't exploit that type of thing. So that became kind of a wrench thrown into the whole thing. When I had the prayer, and it was a formal exorcism, I have a certificate to prove it.
They give you a certificate?
You see stickers, too. Yeah, I had a lollipop that day and everything. Oh, they made me sign a waiver. They gave me a certificate, and they started the prayer, and it started at maybe like 7:30 in the morning, and it went for years and years. I'm sorry, not years. Oh, my God, forbid. Hours and hours, and I don't really remember that. I remember that the exorcist was the exorcist of Connecticut. Still is, I believe so. And he was very afraid. And he didn't really do... Then I had no idea what they were supposed to do. All I knew is that it hurt so much. and that I was sitting there, and literally I remember crying, thinking, God really hates me. You know, because you know, when you know it's real, there's no doubt. Right. People can say, well, I want to witness this, and I'm like, no, you don't. But when you witness it, when a person witnesses it, skeptic or not, you know it's real. You can't deny it. You just can't. It's just like a human reaction to it or whatever. But he got to the point where he stopped it. He stirred up a wasp's nest of activity. Wasn't supposed to stop. When you do the formal exorcism, you're not supposed to stop. You're not supposed to leave the person. You're not supposed to, you know, you're supposed to carry it through. He did not do that. He sent me home with my stickers, and, you know, I was good, supposed to be there. But he sent me home, and I that was in 91. Never wanted to do it again, and I can't get into it legally, why, you know, but there was a really good reason. I mean, not a really good reason, but there was a reason in his mind that he didn't want to do it, and it had to do with my not agreeing to be what I felt was exploited. Right. I didn't want to be on television. I did not want to be, you know, on 2020 or whatever was going on then. I just wanted it done and to be at peace, you know?
Yeah.
So they sent me home. I almost died. Went through, I just took every drug. I didn't even know what drugs I took because I didn't care. I didn't want to kill myself outright, but I just was drinking, and, it was just an awful time. Then I got, I got pregnant with my older daughter, and I tell her all the time, even though she's 15, I tell her that she saved my life because, you know, there was a lot of damage in that area that should have prevented me from having children. So when I got pregnant with her, it was just a whole lifestyle change. I didn't want to be dead anymore. I wanted to live and, you know, whole new perspective, you know.
Right.
But the church never came back.
Wow. So basically, you had to have felt abandoned by the church at that point.
I was abandoned. Yeah. No doubt about it. I was abandoned. And furthermore, I was kind of blacklisted where, you know, over the years, I was very angry. It took a lot of years for me to not be tempted to sue, you know, or tempted to bring it out in such a way that it was attacking them. I really wanted them to just be to pay, you know. And then the older that I get, the more mature that I get spiritually as well as hopefully psychologically, but we're questioning that all the time. You know, I realize that there's reasons that people do things, and there's reasons that I can't presume to know that maybe they could have died if they had kept going, or maybe there was just that God, spirit, universe, whatever, wanted me to know that the power really to exercise yourself is within us. You know, that God gives us that power for ourselves. And yes, it's helpful to be prayed with and over and have your house blessed and whatnot, but it's also very, very important to know that we have the right and the authority to say, hey, I don't care what you are, where you're from, I don't want you in my life or in my house.
Right.
And just continue to say that, you know.
So you come out on this side of all the trauma and going through the exorcism and things, and of course now you have your first beautiful daughter who kind of helps give you a reason to live and carry on. How do you end up as a psychic and a paranormal investigator?
Well, I was always psychic from the time I was little. You know, and I believe that everyone is, and I'll always believe that. I believe you are. I believe everyone in the world is, and I think that you'll agree with me. If you have children, and even if you don't, which I know you do because I read your books and everything, you know, that children are very inherently gifted. They're very they can sense things that we can't.
Right.
And
right.
They know about people. And I believe that I retained that on such a level because I had to stay alive. And in my childhood, yes, there was horrific things that went on, you know, with respect to rituals and everything else. There were a few brief moments that I recall very, very deep spiritual connections with angels and with more specifically Padre Pio, who I believe they sainted. I'll have to look that up because it would be nice to know. and he was someone that, and I didn't know who he was when I was a child, but I have vivid memories of seeing him, and really believe that he intervened a lot for me, you know.
Yeah.
So that being said, you know, I was always a psychic, always saw the people who died, always dreamt, or is it dreamed, I don't know, I don't have my dictionary, of people before they were going to die or if something was going to happen, and it just stayed as extreme as it was when I was a kid. In 2007, when, well, actually back to, after my oldest daughter was born, there was kind of a lull. You know, I went back to church. I was praying a lot. I was realizing that I had these abilities. Sort of stuck in the way of, oh my gosh, maybe it's the devil, you know, that's given me this information, because that's sort of a Christianized way of dealing with a psychic ability. You know, I'm told that a lot, that, you know, it's not from God, but in actuality it is. So after I met my former boyfriend the one who's in my group, Nespara, Dale Roos, he lived in a downstairs of an apartment that I rented. He owned the house and I lived upstairs, but there was a lot of activity in the house. And it started back up real bad in like 2002. 2004. We moved in there in 2002, and I had my daughter in 2004. And I think that she was very sick, and I lost her twin. And she was born very ill, and I think that atmosphere, that type of energy, the emotion that was going on, kind of opened some doors to increase the activity. That was probably always around and just kind of waiting in the wings, and it just came back again in force then. And then we got into trying to get help, because that was around the year that all those ghost hunting shows came on and whatnot. And we didn't even think of doing it ourselves. And right. And I would be telling, you know, Dale, I'm like, look at the shadow figure over there, and this one's this one, and look at that person, but that's not a shadow figure, that's a person, and the name was dot, dot, dot. And he was like, what the heck are you talking about? You know? and I thought, well, yes, I just had a child and all that, you know, I was just not in a position to really believe anything, especially from myself. But we ended up, we called a few groups, and we didn't have a good experience until we called in Keith Johnson's group from Rhode Island, who came and prayed with us, didn't pray over us, didn't pray at us, but actually prayed with us, and, you know, helped us to empower ourselves to understand that it wasn't right for us to be undergoing that activity, you know?
Well,
it's a long story.
You mentioned something about knowing, you know, people that died or something, and Peter's got a story about somebody he knew that kind of did that.
Well, actually, yeah, my brother knew him. It's my brother's brother-in-law, and he would have moments where he would, you know, just not be himself. And he would then say something, and whenever he said it, whatever he said always ended up true. And most often had something to do with somebody's death or an accident or something like that. And there was a couple of those instances. It didn't happen a lot, but when it did, it was always accurate. And the one that stood out in everybody's mind was at a party at the beach, bonfire, and he stood up all of a sudden. And he had been drinking, so everybody thought, oh, he's drunk. But he was in that sort of weird mood that the people who knew him recognized. Then, you know, said goodbye to everybody and said, I'm going to die in 2 days or something like that. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. And he didn't kill himself. He wasn't driving drunk. He was, I forget what it was. It was something unexpected, but it wasn't like he caused it, you know, a heart attack or a... embolism, something weird like in his body, and he was, you know, I don't know, late 40s.
It happens.
Yeah,
it definitely happens.
So they.
It's a scary thing to sit there and know. I'm always like, oh God, I'm going to die tomorrow. I just keep trying to, you know, catch up with it or something. But yeah, that's something I would like to know. You know,
when you now as a paranormal investigator and as a psychic, people are coming to you with a lot of things that sound familiar to you, or is it completely different? When I say sound familiar to you, I mean based on your past experiences.
Well, people come to me. No, I thank God I've never seen anyone as extreme as myself. I have seen people pretty extreme. I mean, I remember going to a healing mass. I'm always forgetting the words, with Father DiOrio, who's very, very gifted. I think he's still up in Massachusetts. And I remember sitting next to this woman, and when he came through the hall or whatever to bless everyone with the holy water, she literally, I mean, I saw it. She came right up off the seat, and she was up a good 5 feet off the air, and of course fell right in front of me, and I thought, oh, yes, of course, right in front of me. Why not? I remember thinking, holy crap, that's incredible. I was, like, awestruck, and not in a good way, but I was, oh, man, no wonder people are running away from me, you know? And she was okay, but whatever it was that had taken that part of her, you know, didn't want to let go, and that was a manifestation of it leaving. But I don't get people that levitate. You know, I get people who have a lot of problems with, like, money problems. If you talk about people with demonic problems, they're going to tell you they have a lot of problems with job, holding down a job. A lot. Well, everybody does. That doesn't mean it's demonic, but it's very specific.
Right.
A lot of constant problems with money, constant problems with your car. There's just certain things, and I don't know why, and, you know, you can disagree with me, that's fine, that I've found that they actually will happen. I get people who, basically, I get people who want readings, and I like to teach people how to empower themselves and how to increase their own psychic abilities. I don't like people coming to me and asking me what color underwear they should put on. Some people do, you know, and it's like, I don't want to be rude or anything, but I don't really need to tell you that, you know. You should really do it yourself. And I don't appreciate psychics who do that, who try to keep people coming back so they can, you know, gain the money and all that other stuff. People need to empower themselves. So I get people like that who want readings. They want connections with people who have passed over, which I can't always do. It's only if the people are there and they want to communicate. I don't have a 1-900 number, you know, to the dead. But there's people who I usually refer them. I do not consider myself an exorcist. I don't consider myself at all. I would never presume to know everything or anything, really, because with the spiritual world, you can never know enough. You can never know enough.
Right.
And people like that, but I usually refer them, or I pray with them, not over them or against them or anything like that. And usually I find someone to refer them to. Thankfully, but I don't deal with the church. You know, I don't deal with the church that much anymore.
You know, I have another question. Is with any community, and Peter and I have our opinions about people that are in the internet radio and things like that too. As far as broadcasters and stuff, and some of the things we've come across with the psychic community, from the things that I've followed and I've read and stuff. Sometimes it seems to be there's a lot of friction between psychics and stuff like that. Is that because of certain people are taking on things they shouldn't be taking on, or is it because of the money thing, or is it because of how it's been portrayed in the media?
Well, a lot of times it's because people are wieners. That's it. Sometimes I'm a wiener, you know, and other people are wieners. But yes, the very good point that you said, though, yeah, when people take on any, when you have a spiritual ability, when you do any type of spiritual work, you know, even if you go to church and you're devout in that way, and not that being spiritual isn't like being devout, it's very similar. Yes, you can take on too much, especially if you're psychic and there's the energy that's coming back and forth. There's certain times that I have to, like, I just have to back off because so much energy. I'm fat. I blame it for me being fat. I mean, you know, it's probably not the truth, but I'll hold on to that until I die. It's my right, you know. But yeah, you could take on too much, but also and I tell this to people, if you're thinking of getting $250 an hour, first of all, who the hell do you think you are? And second of all, where's your mind going to be when you're sitting there and somebody's weeping at the table wanting to connect with their dead wife or husband, and you're thinking, oh, I better deliver because I need that $250. Your mind is not in the – your heart's not in the right spot.
Right.
So, yes, fame – I mean, I'm on Blog Talk Radio. Woo, my ship has come in. You know, it hasn't. I'm on there because I like to talk to people. I like to have guests. I like to inform and whatnot. But, you know, you can't get into the whole I want to be famous. I want to be on television. I want to be have a ghost show. I wanted to when the intention goes from helping others to being whatever you want to be or getting whatever you want to get, your gift is going to be rougher to deal with.
Right.
If that makes sense. I hope that didn't come out snotty. It kind of sounded.
No, not at all. Not at all. It's,
you know, so I'll say to people, if they want to have a medium reading with me, I don't charge them. I can't do it. If somebody wants to sit with me for an hour and a half and let me do the cards or the reading, they do pay me. And I don't think that being paid is wrong, but I think you have to kind of pick and choose the amount and the people that you're going to charge, and certainly keep it reasonable, you know?
Right. Now,
I know you're in radio, and you've obviously had – you can't not, especially in internet radio. People who are nasty, they want to be better than you and everything else. And it's just let things slide off your back and figure that what's going to go on is going to go on for you anyway, irregardless of what anybody does. Because sometimes when you're going to be very successful, and you guys are going to be very, very much more successful than you are now, and you could consider that a premonition or a prediction. Sometimes people, when they sense it or they think it's going to happen, it's just jealousy, and it's because they don't feel good.
Right.
So take it as a compliment, you know.
Yeah, you got to let things just kind of roll off your back lots of times, and keep your stay focused on what you want to do.
Stay focused on what you want to do. That's the most important thing, you know. And do it because you love it.
Yeah, and with the psychic abilities, do it because you want to bring peace, and whatever amount of peace you can bring to a person, however much you can bring them closer to God, keep that in your main sight, you know, your main field of vision, and the gift will increase, it won't decrease, you know?
Well, boy, we're running short of time. I got so many questions. One of the things I have to figure out that because of the abilities you have, it's got to be, I know, and you said that you're tired sometimes, but it's got to be mentally and physically draining constantly. How do you separate that throughout your life and then be able to enjoy your family and friends and stuff like that without the drain of all the things that go on?
Well, I mean, I do a lot of prayer. I do a lot of clearing, which is proactive, not just reactive. Oh gosh, I'm going to get all scientific now. no, but you know, I will do like spiritual clearings, just a personal clearing around myself, around my family. Every once in a while, there's a walkthrough. You know, somebody will walk through, or they'll be sitting here on the chair where I am, and they'll start talking to me in the middle of the night or whatever. And it drives me nuts, you know? Like, get the hell away from me. I'm tired, you know? But then I realize, well, they don't really know. But then there's every once in a while, there's some kind of inhuman thing that really – that bothers me a lot. I get very, very scared. I don't want that to ever happen again.
Yeah.
And so I pray. I read the Bible, I do a lot of meditation, chakra, energy work, just clearing as much as I can, and in the way that I do that, you know, to ask for angelic beings to come out and try to keep my energy good, you know, try to keep my energy where it's hard, especially with two kids, you know, and the nastiness that goes on in the paranormal community and the psychic community. Just to keep my focus and to try to keep my energy good, dancing, singing, whatever. Whatever raises your vibration helps.
Yeah.
There's different ways.
Yeah, it's, and I guess you have to stay on top of it, because like anything else, you have to have balance in your life. You have to have balance in your life.
Yeah, and I don't go out. I mean, we don't go out. Nespara is not even, it's on my website. It's not even of its own website anymore. And we have psychics and non-psychics who go out. We do investigations, but we don't go out every weekend. It's not a hobby for us. It's literally just to help people. I mean, sometimes we're curious, you know.
Yeah.
We take measurements and all that other stuff. But, you know, I don't ever go out and try to stir things up. I won't do that, because it would be dumb for me, and it might hurt somebody else too. But there's ways.
Well, Christine, I really appreciate you coming on the show. You have a remarkable story, and I'd like to hear more about it. I've listened to your show, and what people need to know is she's a featured show on Blog Talk, and that's a big deal. That's a real big deal. And why don't you tell everybody about your website and how they can contact you? And are you still on Z-Talk also?
I am on Z-Talk. Yeah, you got to get over there quick, because it's the technical genius that I am. I never can really connect with that. But Z-Talk on Sunday. And Blog Talk Radio, who said I was featured? That's cool.
You are. If you go to your front page, you are a featured show.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. But that's great. Yeah, we're on Saturday at 7, usually every, and sometimes during the week when I have a whim, you know, when I just want to go out and do some, sometimes they're teachings, sometimes I just do readings for people, and, you know, it's a good, pretty good show, I hope. I mean, I try to make it a good show.
Very good show. I've listened to quite a few of them, and you've had some interesting guests on there, too, also.
Yeah, we have a lot of good guests. The guests have always been good. We didn't get Jesse Ventura on. There was a confusion with his publicist, so I was a little bit, I was sad. I was sad about that. But, yeah, we're talking to very interesting people coming up, and I'm like, whoa, you know? It's kind of weird to think that I'm going to be talking to some of the people, you know? But anybody who wants to be a guest, just, you know, email me or just message me over at Blog Talk. We usually have people on. We don't worry about who they are, how famous or whatever. I wish you guys would come on. I'm sort of embarrassed to ask, because I'm like, what if they say no?
Hey, we're always available.
I'd like to know how you guys started out and where you get your just the wonderful shows that you do are just so great.
Thank you.
Like I said, I'm not even in California. I'm like, I want to move to California for actually, I've been very cold to California with all the calls. Most of the calls I get are from California. The last like 3 radio shows I've done have been from California, so I'm like, okay.
Well, that is the benefits of the World Wide Web, you know what I mean?
Yeah, really, right?
A strong reach. Well, and we'd love to come on. Yeah, just let me know and we'll figure it out.
Yeah,
that'd be good.
And your website is peacefulreadings.com?
peacefulreadings.com, yep. And all the information is there, and, you know, that's great. You guys are wonderful. Peter, you're very, very quiet.
I'm the sidekick. Some days,
No, let me tell you the truth, Christina. He used all his verbal skills last night.
That is. I talked more, a whole lot more than usual last night. Throws me off.
Well, Christine Korda is our guest. And Christine, thank you so much. Best of luck to you. And we'll definitely stay in touch.
Thank you, guys. Have a great night.
Thank you, you too.
Best of luck.
And that was Christine Korda right here on Soup's World Primetime on Thursday. And that's going to about wrap it up for us tonight. We got about a minute left. Anything you want to, you know, wrap up with that? That was totally interesting, man.
Yeah, that's crazy stuff as far as the being possessed and all that. I mean, I can't imagine what that would feel like. And you know, you hear about it, and of course they love to make movies about it.
Yeah.
You know, and of course anything in movies is a movie. This is like the real stuff. Somebody who fought off demons, spirits, whatever they're called. That's creepy stuff, man.
Yeah,
definitely creepy
stuff.
It
is. And the thing is, you know, We're writing down. But you go to the church for help and stuff like that, and then in the very end they kind of abandon you.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, when you're seeking that spiritual guidance or the help for something, no matter what it is. I mean, you go to the doctor for something and the doctor leaves you.
It leaves
a bitter pill in your mouth. But anyway, we really appreciate Christine coming on tonight. We had a great time with her, and check her out. PeacefulReadings.com, and she's on Blog Talk Radio, and you can also find her on Z-Talk Radio. You listen to Swoops World. Thanks for joining us. You can we'll be back Wednesday night, Swoops World late night. Our guest Wednesday is Stacey Lupinacci, and we'll have a great time with her too. So thanks for all, and we'll see you soon.
Night all.
Good night.
The views and opinions expressed by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Talk Story Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.